Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Christian Benford overall is just unbelievable. It's his work ethic. It's the way he goes about his business, his consistency in everything he does. I can't tell you how many times we'll just be sitting in there watching practice stage training camp, and you just try to find stuff to critique on him, and you're like, the common thread with him is you just keep saying, God, CB just does everything right. He just does everything right.
CB, not CP, by the way, before you get to... Too much of a big head.
Boy, I would have felt really good about that.
Bobby Babich on Christian Benford. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Thanks for listening. NFL opener tonight, Dallas at Philadelphia. Our coverage starts at 7. The game starts at 8:20. Same timing for Sunday. Our coverage won't start. We'll start before 7.
Yes.
7 in the morning, maybe.
Definitely we'll start before 7, yes.
The game is still at 8:20. Let's go to James here. Hi, James.
Hey, fellas. Good afternoon, good evening, and how we doing today?
Good, fine. Let's go.
Show. All right. Well, let's talk about when the Bills went to the Super Bowl 4 years. I'm sure this radio station would have a lot different talk about what happened last year. So I just think these Buffalo fans are a little fragile. I mean, why are they trying to crush Bean, and why are they trying to crush McDermott? I mean, if you got to crush someone, crush the Sabres, you know?
It's not either or, and most aren't. Thanks, James. Here's Kevin next. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, guys. You know, if I were to sit down with Bean and McDermott with a 5-year job performance, I basically say I'm really happy with everything you guys have done, except for one very odd thing. They have not surrounded this superstar with superstar wide receivers, which is odd to me. When you look at teams like Cincinnati, Tampa Bay, or just that have two deep threats, two really excellent receivers, and it's been years now, and I think our window of opportunity is going to close here with Josh if we don't put some studs in front of him. They did it with Diggs, and I guess he was just a problem. Gabe Davis was the making of a superstar, in my opinion. And in that 1 year, both of those guys fell off the face of the planet. They just disappeared, and then now they're off the team. I just kind of don't get it.
Okay. Well, you're making a different point there, I think. Yeah, I mean, it's a very widely held criticism of the organization. People aren't, I think, usually losing their minds over it, but what they have at receiver is very much in question. And, you know... Start the clock anywhere you want, 2024, 2023, 2020. They've done all right. And even in the playoffs, they still score. So I've wanted to fight this fight for years, but now it's kind of tough. And here comes a new season, and maybe everybody, at times myself included, wanting to, you know, beat on these guys for not being better at receiver will, not that they want this exactly necessarily, but, you know, be shown a little bit to be right here. It hasn't killed him, you know?
No, I mean, last year, I mean, Bean is not wrong to point at the scoreboard to talk about the year they had last year when he's, you know, on the offensive about criticism of his drafting and his receiver core. The question that I still have now is, okay, well, that's 1 year, and is it something you can duplicate? I understand them not wanting to do more off of last year, but they also lived off of turnovers a lot last year, and not just their own. They didn't turn it over themselves. And, you know, Joe Marino has pointed this out, maybe the last round of this, not that this is necessarily a new round of it, but, you know, the takeaways aren't sticky. The Bills have been in the top 5 every year with McDermott. Like, they take the ball away effectively. tactically. I don't think that's all just luck. Some of it is, certainly. Fumble recoveries, that kind of thing. But they have taken the ball away effectively every year of McDermott's thing here. What they hadn't done prior to last year was take care of it to such an extent. And I'm expecting them to take the ball away plenty. I don't know that they'll lead the league or be top three or whatever they were last year, but I think that if there's a correction coming here, a regression coming, it's in them not ever losing the ball when they put it on the ground themselves. And that, you know, that helped them score their 30 points a game last year. And if that goes away, where are you? Like, if you need more from your offense because you've got longer fields, you're not, you know, or you're behind because you're turning it over, whatever. I would not bank 100% that they're all set if someone in that receiving core doesn't emerge here. I mean, they I think probably need someone to do that this year.
I think probably going back to, just quickly I'll say this and we'll go back to the phones, going back to how we were talking half an hour ago, what are they if they are middle of the pack in turnovers? They're 2 years ago's Bills, probably. I mean, that team was 23rd even, and they were blowing games. The Denver game was four turnovers. The Jet opener, Allen threw three picks, all to the same guy, by the way, Whitehead. Like, they had four games that year with three or more turnovers. Last year, for the year, how many turnovers did they have? Like, eight? Maybe it wasn't that few, but it was low.
It's a ridiculously low number.
Yeah. So that team went to the second round. You know, like, they probably can overcome some regression there and still get us to January. Tim is next. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how's it going? Quick little scenario to run by you guys. So let's say Baltimore gets the one seed, Buffalo, Kansas City in either order, 2-3. We finally do it. We beat Kansas City in the divisional round. We can finally stop listening to everybody say that we can't do it in the playoffs. But then we go to Baltimore and end up losing. Are we happy at all that we finally beat Kansas City, or does it just not even matter?
It's not a success. It's not.
Right.
It is what it is, but it wouldn't be like, no biggie. They lost in the AFC Championship again. I'm pretty sure most people would say that. Here's Sean next. Hi, Sean.
Hey, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Good.
All right. So, yeah, I agree with a few callers back as far as the roster. Really kind of top to bottom, outside of Josh being average, being mid. And you take a look at the Eagles. You take a look at, obviously, the Ravens, the Chiefs. Yeah, we go position group by position group. You've got, I would take almost every other position group on those teams other than the Bills. The Bills are quarterbacks against Jackson Mahomes. Not Hurts, obviously, but Jackson Mahomes, it's a wash. But then the rosters, top to bottom, are just better. They have more blue-chip players. And we've had 8 to 9 years now, 8 years, of trying to build a formidable defensive line that we actually were able to have under, like, Marone and Rex Ryan. And somehow we're not able to build in 8 years. And, you know, we're worried about the secondary looking as kind of crummy as it does because of that lack of elite talent. And we're hanging our hat on a hopeful washed, hopefully not washed, Joey Bosa, a kind of non-impactful but yet solid, a.k.a. mid, player in Greg Rousseau. Ed Oliver, vastly overrated, I believe, you know, makes a splash play every now and then. But, you know, the more I listen to Chris Sims, he annoys me in some kind of right. And he's got a little, you know, he kind of has a little arrogance to him, but yeah, we just lack blue chip players. And
is that what he says? You'd have to tell me what he says.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he basically always cites the fact that there's not enough blue chip guys on the Bills.
The one area I would want to stick up for, Mike mentioned it when he mentioned Dawkins. The line overall, they have built a tremendous offensive line. I would take their offensive line ahead of any of the teams you mentioned. Now, Kansas City might have that straightened out with the left tackle they drafted, who's healthy. But the line has been a strength here. And we'll see. If Osiris Torrance, careful what you wish for. You want evidence of a blue-chip player, that means you're going to get a top-of-the-market guard contract for Osiris Torrance as soon as this offseason. Because he might be the best player of that group. And if he has another year like he's had already, he's going to be someone who's going to go right to whatever that – I don't even know what the top-of-the-market rate is for guards, but it's probably $20 million or more. So that'll be evidence of a blue chip player, but now you got to pay him like one. So right now you're getting away with it on the line because really Dawkins is highly paid. They've got Brown under contract for a long time, so the bookends are there, and you're going to have to just kind of keep filling in the rest. We'll see what happens with McGovern moving forward because he's done after this year contract-wise. So you may need to do something there, but the line has been a real strength. And I tend to overlook it when I'm thinking about this point, because I'm thinking about guys who are making plays out on the field. I'm thinking about Kyle Hamilton, roaming the secondary or the line of scrimmage for Baltimore, or skill players on offense. The line is really maybe the next strength of the team after the quarterback.
You know, Sean, you make a lot of points that some of which I would agree with. I'm at a point here in this conversation where I need to ask my question, which is, what are we trying to figure out? All right. I might agree with some of that, the premise of the point that there are three teams in the NFL that are better. Are there four? I don't know. Like, what are we trying to figure out? The overriding point is still, this team wins like crazy no matter how bad you think they are everywhere else on the field but quarterback, or anybody thinks. And the only maybe interesting comeback to that is, well, January. And you got to throw your hands up, I guess, at some point, because they haven't won a Super Bowl yet. And then there's also a way of looking at this which goes back 10 years and be like, oh my God, how could anybody be upset? I mean, I know there are people listening right now that have to be thinking that. I don't know. They're the Super Bowl favorite again. And if Josh Allen has 85% to do with that, and Mahomes has only 80, and Jackson has only 75 because Kyle Hamilton plays for Baltimore, okay. Okay. What are we trying to figure out? Are we trying to decide whether the general manager and the coach are worth keeping? Are we trying to figure that out the night of the opening game in the league? I don't need to be figuring that out today. I've got no use for that today. Like, what are we trying to figure out here? You want to call back and say, but the Lions. Okay, fine. I don't know. Maybe the Lions. You're in the top tier of NFL teams. There's no doubt about it. And no, they don't. You're right. I can't argue with position group analysis like that. I really can't. Philadelphia, everybody said, had the best roster in the league. I'm no better than second. And okay. That'll have to do.
Yeah, whatever we think of ranking their individual talent, player by player, group by group, it all works. And it is, to say it's just Allen is, I think, erroneous. I mean, I think it's a discredit to the other players there that are pulling their weight. No, they don't have Kyle Hamilton. No, they don't have Justin Jefferson. And would I be better off if I had one of those guys? Yeah, I think so. But the whole thing works. It sort of circles back to, like, why do you want to discredit the people who put the team together again? Because the results speak for themselves. And it is not just the dude wearing the cape jumping over tall buildings all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say back to that. I think maybe I would agree with that Allen is a greater percentage of the Bills' success than the other quarterbacks. But still, earlier we're like, you had a guy call up and say, how bad is this team if Allen doesn't play? Like, what's the point of that question? How bad are any of these teams if their quarterbacks don't play? Even Ertz, I might say, for Philadelphia, certainly the others. All right.
But we pause now to discuss with you Game Day Mentality, which is presented by Best Self. Best Self Behavioral Health, official mental health partner of the Buffalo Bills. So we know this is a titanic matchup for week one, Steve.
Titanic.
But we know these two teams, to a great degree, are largely familiar with one another. That is not the case for Buffalo's draft class and, you know, for Baltimore's draft class for that matter. How, as a rookie, if you know you're playing, say, like a T.J. Sanders, a Deion Walker, how, as a rookie that wants to make the best impression possible on his veteran teammates, like, you can count on me, how do you enter a game that is so big in prime time? It's your first ever. How do you summon up the control to not literally have your eyes pop out of your head with excitement, adrenaline, and everything else?
It's hard. And every guy handles it a little differently, right? Some handle it really well. Some of them realize that, hey, man, it's time to cut it loose and just play and have fun. That's what you've been working for. You deserve to be here. You earned it. You know what you're doing. That's why you're there, right? You're what it's all about. You got to play with that kind of mentality. But it's hard to think about that when it's all you've ever hoped and dreamed is to be in a part of a game like this. And, you know, you look over there and it's not just, you know, it's it's not Vanderbilt over there, you know. It's the Baltimore Ravens.
250-pound right. running back.
It's Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson over there,
and a 300-pound
right?
fullback.
So that does go through your mind. And, of course, even though it's a home game for guys like, you know, TJ and Deion Walker and, you know, and Jordan Hancock and the rest of these guys, even though it's a home game, this first home game they're going to witness, and let me tell you, we all know, those of us of a certain age, you know what it's like in that joint on an opener. It's going to be
prime time, no less.
Off. It's going to be off
the chain.
The chain. It's the roof is off the place, literally, right? So, yeah, they're going to have a lot to deal with. The veterans will help them. They'll be ready. It's not like they've never played football before, but they've never experienced it like this, and it's different. I'm sure they're going to handle it fine. And well, you have to ask them after the fact how they think it went. But remember, it's not too many of them that are going to be out there first snap, first play, let's go.
Yeah.
They'll get rotated in. They'll get a chance to kind of like get the flow of it, watch. Like, if you're a rookie D tackle, you're out there and you're, you know, Deion Walker's going to be watching Daquan Jones like a hawk. Yeah. What's he doing? How's it going? What's the call? The whole thing. So that when he gets in there, it's not all, you know, fresh.
And we heard Coach McDermott just say in the last segment when we played his comments from his press conference today that young guys, Dorian Strong was the example in the answer that he gave, he's got to trust in his preparation. You have to trust that you've prepared yourself with the assistance of the coaching staff and teammates properly to play if needed. Whether you have zero NFL games on your resume or 100. So that's how they've always approached it here, and it'll be no different for, you know, the rookies on Buffalo's roster on Sunday night. So that is Game Day Mentality, presented by Best Self Behavioral Health, official mental health partner of the Buffalo Bills. I am trying to get a handle on what, besides turnovers, could ultimately sway this game, because the two teams are pretty evenly matched. You could practically call the quarterbacks a wash.
Right.
Isaiah likely down for the Ravens in all likelihood, no pun intended. That's a plus for the Bills' defense. Some would argue that the Ravens' offense, top to bottom, is more talented. I think it's closer than people think, because I think, as we've discussed many times, Steve, through the course of the offseason, that Josh Palmer and Elijah Moore raised the talent level of the Bills receiving core from what it was a year ago. So I'm trying to find where the edge sits, and it might be, you know, which defense is more effective in neutralizing these high-powered offenses.
The Bills score a ton of points. They have, ever since Josh has come, you know, since 2020, they score a ton of points. That's always been the case. They didn't last year in the first game in game week four against Baltimore, but I'll say this, I went back and watched it, and they were about to climb back into that game big time just in the early in the third quarter, and there's about three or four plays that happened. I think maybe one of them was a turnover, but I'm not sure. Three or four plays happened that all went against the Bills, and it took them out of it, and then they were back down double-digit, and it was never be had. But they were climbing back into that and going to get it close.
It was 21-10.
Yeah, and they were about to score, and I think happened. I think they turned it over.
They're on the plus side of the 50,
right?
And then they called that trick play, and Josh got stripped.
There you go. So all that, it all went down the tubes from there. So they're hard to put away, and they'll be even more difficult in their own building. We saw last year in the opener, the Bills were down 17-3 to the Arizona Cardinals. and Josh stepped into a phone booth and stepped out, and he had a cape on, and all went, you know, and they scored four touchdowns.
Right.
They're hard to beat. Josh is hard to beat. And this, with an upraised level of talent around him, he won't have to put the cape on theoretically.
That would be the hope.
That would be the hope. So we'll see. This Ravens offense was spectacular a year ago. Spectacular. They didn't score as many points as the Bills did, but they were unbelievably productive. I think it may come down, if you're going to look at stats and data points and all the minutiae that you look at, certainly you're right, turnovers are going to be a big deal, but I think it's going to be which team is more efficient offensively. You got to find a way to stay on the field. And with the Bills struggling at corner with, you know, their top two corners, and you can, like we said, you can argue their top three corners not even practicing, that tilts it in favor of the Ravens to me. Isaiah likely or not for the Ravens offense. Yeah. That gives them a big boost in their matchup capabilities. They'll be able to match up deeper into the lineup than they would have if Christian Benford and Trey White and Max Hairston were on the field.
To give you an idea on just how evenly matched the offensive units are, the Bills and Ravens had the top 2 point differentials in the AFC last year. They were both 157. Both of them were plus 157. So over 17 games, they had the exact same point differential. Now, if
like
that week
touchdowns.
That week four game had gone differently, the Bills presumably would have been ahead because they were minus 25 against the Ravens in the
right.
regular season. And they still ended up plus 157 and tied with Baltimore.
Neither one of these teams get beat by double digits. The last team to do it to Buffalo was Baltimore last year. And in games that Lamar starts, it's been like an NFL record 50-plus games since anybody's beaten them by more than one possession. That's the most since 1950. Nobody beats the Ravens by double digits. So it's going to be that kind of game.
Yeah.
It's going to be that kind of game.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones at 803-0550, where you're welcome to weigh in on your thoughts about Sunday night's Week 1 contest, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. And we lead off today with Mike in Hamburg. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Two things I want to say, Steve. After this call, can you stay online and give me your email? I got to email you something that's pretty important.
Yeah, I don't. We'll see.
We'll see. Just. Yeah.
All right, no, I'm serious. It's
I think
important.
You can. Why don't you? Here's a better idea, Mike. Why don't you direct message One Bills Live Twitter handle?
I'm not on Twitter.
No. Okay.
All right. Well, maybe we'll figure out. Have
the board op take your information, and Steve will get in touch with you.
This is important because my daughter has cancer, and mm-hmm. she's not doing real well, and I wanted to see if he could help me with a few helmet signatures so that I could use that to for
yeah,
the benefit.
Yeah, we get it. So give your information to the board op before they hang up on you. And we'll figure something out.
Tell them that then, please.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my take on the game. The Ravens have been talking for about 2 months now, because they think that this is going to be a revenge game against the Bills, because obviously they're talking about the Bills. They shouldn't have won the game. The only reason that they won the game is because of Andrews dropping the ball. That is not the only reason they won the game, because they still could have got the ball back. But I got a feeling, and it's in Buffalo. It's the opening game, and it's the last opening game that the stadium is going to put the game into, have a game.
Yeah.
I think that they are going to absolutely crush the Ravens.
Okay. Well,
my prediction is 41-17.
Well, there'll be a lot of happy Bills fans on Monday. Thanks for that, Mike. I'll put you on hold so the board op can get your information, so stay where you are, and when as soon as he has a chance to take down your information, he will. 41-17. Does Lamar Jackson break a leg in that game, or what? I don't know about 41-17. Okay. I mean, look, I'll be happy to see it, but as Steve was just saying, nobody runs and leaves. Nobody runs off and leaves the Bills, and nobody runs off and leaves the Ravens either. It doesn't happen very often, and with two teams of this caliber, I wouldn't expect it to happen again.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very close game.
So, and just about everybody that I have seen pick this game, whether they pick the Ravens or they pick the Bills, it's by no more than 3 points. And about half of them, NFL.com had about 12 people pick the game. You know, there are various writers and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone had it as a 3-point game or less. Half of them had it as a 1-point game. Like 28-27 or 30-29 or something like that. Everybody under the sun thinks this is going to be a very tightly fought game. And I would say I side with the majority.
Yeah, I do too, obviously. I'm with you. 41-17. Well, there you go. There's our first one, our first prediction.
Yeah.
Hour number two continues to roll along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer hanging with you here on a Wednesday. It's beautiful outside. Sun is shining. Bills back to practice.
Week one. Officially week one because the practice schedule has begun.
That is right. Bills will be on the practice field a little after noon. We are expecting to hear from Bills head coach Sean McDermott around 11:45. That's in about 10 or so minutes. Won't be able to carry that live here, but we'll keep you posted on hopefully any injury notes we get from that. At Sal Sports, Sal Capaccio will also have you covered over on Twitter. But let's get connected to our fans. 803-0550, the number to call. And when we get connected to our fans, it is brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Mike is with us next up. Mike, how we doing?
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call, man.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey, so, you know, pass openers, like, you know, like week one, you know, I always felt like the narrative was, you know, that's just kind of getting our foot in the ground and whatnot. But, you know, this one is different, man. You know, week one, this is, you know, the narrative with, you know, the Bills playoff runs have been, you know, we need to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And a conference game, week one, like, we need to go. And kind of the main reason I'm calling is I was listening to the guests you guys had on from Baltimore. Pissed me off, man. I'm trying to disrespect the host, but, like, just I just feel like, you know, like, Baltimore's media and players personnel do not respect us. Right, like Lamar Jackson should have been MVP last year as well. But we're not going to talk about all the pros that Lamar had around him. Like, just the disrespect that we get from, you know, just that market over there, it just pisses me off. And I just feel we as a team, we need to come out, and I want to see a fired up Buffalo Bills, and I want to see a convincing win. And that's just what I need to be. Like, we need to find a reason, a way to win this game week one and continue to, like, shut off the narrative about the Bills are a weak defense. Like, I called afternoon, guys, and I really feel we have strengthened our interior defenses. And this Buffalo dime package that Buffalo soft, like, we just need to kill that narrative week one and punch the Ravens in the mouth.
Mike, thanks for the call. I don't totally know if he was being disrespectful. He was surprised people were as nervous going into this game. I understand that the MVP
thing is the MVP thing. I would love to throw that conversation away forever. Ravens fans won't let it go.
I will tell you, though. Which
is, you know what? Fine, that's your choice. That's your prerogative to stay in the method of madness, but that's your madness.
I will tell you, though, and Mike, thanks for the call. Loving that a rivalry is really starting to develop between the two fan bases, the two teams, what have you. And to a certain extent, it can be annoying, it can be frustrating, especially if you're online on social media a lot. Like, it can get very vitriol. I am all for the rivalry. I am all for kind of the two teams playing into each other's destinies and their legacies and all that stuff. I absolutely love that. And yeah, to a certain extent, yeah, you've had Baltimore media, not saying Kyle's a part of this, but of course we've had Baltimore media, not to name any names, but, you know, call the city a city of losers. McDermott has almost brought up that point as well.
McDermott has now several times brought it up, very fiery, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, there's no love lost for that guy. I'm not going to mention his name. But
I just don't know if we're going to – in any way, I don't think you'll get a convincing win. I'm not saying the Bills can't win. What I'm saying is I don't think you're going to walk away from this going, we are just going to walk through Baltimore the next time we play them.
Right.
They're both too talented, and they're both in a similar spot to where – it's going to be the 27-25 final score where even when you were up, what, 21-10 and you got the early turnovers and what have you.
Game's not over.
Game is not over. It's the same with the Chiefs. You're just not going to get a blowout win even in the regular season when you beat them. It's happened, what, once?
Matter of fact, the regular season game, the Bills were starting to find their form again, and then the accursed trick play happens.
Yeah, so even without the trick play, maybe that regular season game, which, I mean, Shakir's out, they don't look comfortable. Until
Shakir gets hurt
did a little
in
bit.
That game.
Yeah, until a little bit into it. You know, you never know. But yeah, like, I mean, with the Chiefs, as much as those games have been close, you've had one, I would argue, blowout win, or at least comfortable win, back in Kansas City. They had the rain delay in the middle of it, the whole thing. I think that was really the only convincing one. Every one of them had been very close.
Nope. That scoreboard's deceiving. It takes an interception that is returned.
Oh, right. What is that? Is that in 22?
Yes.
Yeah.
It takes a defensive play to get that done. And even then, the Chiefs are going to try to storm back, and there's one more pick to end it all.
Mm-hmm.
So the scoreboard kind of deceived on that one, too. The rain delay game, yeah, it was the one that it was probably the most comfortable, but
It was 21.
You still needed several interceptions to make sure it went away. That's how it goes. When you're facing great teams, it's never going to be comfortable.
No, but I fully get the point, though, of wanting to shut down the narrative of...
It's a tone setter, though.
The defense being bad. I absolutely agree with Mike's point, though. I think they've gotten much better on the interior of the defensive line. Look, it sucks for Dwayne Carter, but I'll stand by it. It looked like he was being lost in the shuffle that already Deion Walker and TJ Sanders had surpassed him. We talked to Sal about an hour ago now, where Sal, you know, was absolutely singing the praises of Deion Walker and how good he has looked. And to be fair, I think most Bills fans that have watched the preseason or really just looked at anything from the preseason, he was one of the main figures, one of the main positives from that. And it's just, you know, where both teams are at. Yeah, I don't see a comfortable, convincing win. I see it much more of a thank God that's over. And you just hope you're 1-0. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. But I love that the rivalry is somewhat kind of fully formed now. In part, it's because of Allen and Jackson's play and them going back and forth with MVPs here and very much playing a role into, you know, each other's stories, essentially. Mahomes is this. You know, if it's not for Mahomes, Jackson and Allen probably have gone back and forth with MVPs and Super Bowls.
Right.
You know, if not for Mahomes winding up on the Chiefs, that's probably what's happening.
Even if one of these three quarterbacks ends up in another conference, it's a different story for one of them, or all of them, even.
Yeah, all of them having to be in the AFC at the same time.
Because, as you said, then maybe one of them, the two that are still splitting against each other, it's not just about MVPs, it's about Super Bowl appearances. And you're still fighting amongst each other, though, for it. And the other one's not in the way.
Yeah.
And it's more hyper-focused. Say, for example, like Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are in the NFC North instead for some reason in this hypothetical. Does life get easier for the Bills still? Maybe. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not to be discredited. Both of these teams are not patsies. They are not to be taken lightly, even though they are a tier below the Chiefs in terms of winning. In terms of talent, they are there. All three of them are in this Bermuda Triangle of hell of having to get through each other. And unfortunately for two of those teams, they get lost along the way.
I think really the only difference now that's kind of become between the two of them is, you know, where the playoff losses stem from. Who do fans blame? You know, for the Bills, it's very much become regular. And many instances it's correct, coaching the defense. Where with Baltimore, it is the superstar quarterback. I think many Ravens fans would blame Jackson turnovers really become an issue for him in the playoffs. That's kind of notorious for him now. And right. Even to a certain extent, it's not as correct as it was years ago. But in the AFC divisional game, that gets away from him because the Bills win the turnover battle. It's a bad snap that's almost returned for a fumble touchdown by Von Miller. There's a pick early in that game. Just a bad miscommunication.
Oh, it wasn't even a fumbled snap. Jackson tries to do something. He slips.
Yeah, he slips. And so like that's really the differences now between the teams is that for Ravens, you're kind of looking more at Jackson going like, okay, if we pass the ball more, is it really that bad? What is going on? What's up with the turnovers? Where for the Bills, it is much more of coaching, defense. I'd argue also talent level as a whole. You know, the last caller, Mike, did bring up the, you know, the All-Pros. Bills had what, like two Pro Bowlers last year?
Yeah. It's not even close.
And I think, don't get me wrong, I think a certain part of that is I think the Ravens are wonderful at promoting their players, at getting them out there on the national scene, the whole thing. The Bills, I don't want to say are bad at it, but there are too many times where I still see people, you know, saying that keep Buffalo a secret, and I can't stand that. And I hope it changes this year. I hope Hard Knocks, for as, you know, kind of lackluster as it was, I hope now Benford, you know, somewhat becomes a bit of more of a known guy. Greg Rousseau, Terrell Bernard, you know, those kind of guys.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways, really. If you want to keep Buffalo a secret and then you also want players to get some sort of recognition, you cannot have it both ways. That is the simple thing of it. You want one or the other, and that's perfectly fine for your prerogative. I don't care if the Bills don't get the national recognition. If Bills players don't get the national recognition, I know I'm definitely opposite on you of that, but not in a contentious way. I'm not worried about it. And I also don't care about it for an MVP conversation, for example. I don't need to tear the roster down in order to prop somebody else up.
Right. That was kind of weird. Let's go back to the phones here. Ron is with us next. Ron, how are we doing?
Good. I just wanted to mention when you guys were talking about being in the wrong conference at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
Look back at Dan Marino. He got lost in the shuffle with all his yards and touchdowns because of Kelly and Elway.
Yeah, a little bit. Thanks for the call, Ron. I think also, too, though, I don't love talking about this because I know I make people upset. The AFC was not the AFC of today in the 90s. The NFC ran the NFL for a long time. I think I don't know the exact number, but it was over, I think, 10 straight Super Bowls the NFC won. I mean, realistically, that was 49ers Cowboys going back and forth. He did get lost in the shuffle, though. His teams were significantly worse than those Bills teams. He was kind of carrying them by a thread and winning like 9 games. Like, and it's where it's a little bit different with Allen and Buffalo now. Allen and Buffalo are like regularly in for the 1 seed and the 2 seed, what have you. The Dolphins were winning like 9-10 games at times and really struggling. Marino was kind of like the only, once the Marx brothers were gone too, especially, was kind of the only guy holding that ship together. And it didn't go particularly well against much more talented Bills teams.
Now, why did you make me curious enough to look? The NFC thing.
Yeah, how many years was in a row?
1984 to 1996.
Yeah, I thought it was over 10. Yep.
And ready? The Broncos lose 4 Super Bowls. 3 of them in that span.
Yep.
The Bills lose their 4.
Mm-hmm.
The team that starts this streak? It's Miami. Marino.
Oh, yeah, in 84 Marino against the 49ers.
Pearson's only Super Bowl gets ragdolled.
Yeah, a lot of those Super Bowls are blowouts.
And, again, the closest one by a comfortable margin is wide right. The second closest is the Niners beating the Bengals 20-16.
It went to 96, right?
It went through 96 when the Packers beat the Patriots.
So then Elway and the Broncos end it with 2 straight.
Correct.
Yeah. Wow.
And even that one, ready? The closest was a 1-point loss. The second closest was a 4-point loss. The third closest was 10.
Yeah, Super Bowl was not a close game for a long time.
In the 90s?
There was a run there. It was not close.
In that mid-80s to mid-90s, it was, like you said, dominated by the NFC to a point where I had to look it up and go, man, I'm glad I wasn't alive for more than half of that.
Yeah, so it's like even if Marino wasn't on the Dolphins, he was on another NFC team, it also he had to be on the right NFC team. Mm-hmm. He's got to be Joe Montana's successor. That's not happening in 83. He's got to be on the Cowboys, but that's still the Landry teams that are eventually going to crater in the early 90s. So, it's a little bit different. I think the comparison I always go to is, what if the AFC East doesn't change? What if Tom Brady all of a sudden has Peyton Manning in his division and those two are going back and forth every year for the AFC East? I think that's where, luck for both of them, they kind of had to avoid each other and only played the once and they didn't play each other in the division. It allowed the Patriots for the early part of that rivalry to really dominate, have home field advantage and such.
Oh, God, I was alive for half of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say it's somewhat unusual that their last game was us. For us, they were our second-to-last game, and so the data, it really hasn't changed much. And you don't know every year when you open the unknowns, what plays they may have put in, what plays maybe we put in, and personnel has changed a little bit. They're a strong team. They've seemed to add every year to their core, which has been very talented and full of playmakers and guys that create issues. They've done a good job with their draft, I think, year to year, and added some help from a veteran standpoint. They do a really good job as far as building the roster. They're well coached. It'll be a big challenge for us.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott on the Ravens. Giant storm just blew in. I'm putting it a little strong. But got really dark very quickly here in the North Towns, and the rain's coming down. I thought I heard thunder. There's debate here in the studio whether we heard thunder or whether it was from one of the ads or whatnot. I still think it was thunder. Josh, do you disagree?
It had to be pretty loud thunder. I mean, we have soundproof rooms, Well,
soundproof-ish.
I guess if it's loud enough, you could probably hear it pretty well.
Yeah, like we would, if lightning struck, just off in the field past this building, I think you would hear it very, very easily.
Yeah, because it's right there.
Yeah.
We hear the rain hit the window sometimes too, so it could have been thunder.
Do you guys have one of these apps where you get the notification of, hey, lightning was just detected in your area?
Yep, and it says seek shelter or something like that.
Mine doesn't say seek shelter. Maybe it probably should. Maybe it assumes that it knows that I should be seeking shelter. Not sure. We'll get to the phones in a second here. We got some buzz around the league, like stuff that's being released right before the start of the season here. As Jeremy returns here, Schefter just tweeted that the Eagles tried to get Micah Parsons from the Cowboys because, of course, they did. And what's the other one here? Anthony Richardson and the Colts have talked about a trade. That one, okay. He's a backup at this point anyway.
Howdy, I'm back.
He's back. Let's go to...
It was raining.
It was, yeah. Did you... Was there lightning? We were debating whether we heard lightning.
We heard thunder. We heard thunder. I just walked the kids to school for day one of school. Wanted to just be a part of that. So.
And you got rained on the first day walk?
On the way home.
On the way home. Okay, so that's
great timing. Everything's fine.
Good.
Things went well, but yeah. Rain on the way home. Hard rain. So
would you say you're soaked?
I am currently soaked. I would say this is... how many years have I been on? This is the wettest I've ever been while doing the show.
Wow, really?
Yes. I mean, it's inside, Joe, and sometimes
there was never, when the Sabres were in the playoffs, like some dunk tank feature or something.
It's a good thought. No, this is it. This is it right here. My current degree of, it was raining so hard, one of those ones where you take your phone out of your pocket to kind of hold it away from potential wet pockets scenarios. Like I've had.
But where
a phone
are you putting it? You're holding it in the rain.
Holding it like in your hand or like almost under your shirt or into a safer pocket. Yeah, I mean,
you're creating a human umbrella for your phone
in addition to an actual umbrella. Was prepared, had an actual umbrella, and I'm still soaked.
Wow.
So I was holding for my wife on the walk, but yeah. Nice little tradition there. The first day of school, the walk to school. We had a lot of people in our neighborhood that walk to school. So, it's, busy day.
But
did
they buy in? They're excited?
I think so. We'll see how it goes at the end of the day. But, yeah, no waterworks, no tears, nothing like that. Things were,
good.
We'll have to go back and study the tape. But, got out of it clean. Clean report.
Nice. James been waiting patiently on hold, actually on earlier McDermott conversation. Let's go to James here from Buffalo. What's up, James?
How you doing, guys? A hot take that is coming from a caller quite a bit ago, but I also agree with him. Unfortunately, you know, after watching Soft Knox, this Ted Lasso team that we've got, which I do love the fact that they are top-notch. You know, I haven't seen a team so solidified and so together since those early 90s Bills that I watched lose four Super Bowls. And I unfortunately believe that McDermott is not going to be the coach to bring them to a Super Bowl. You know, I don't know what you guys feel about that.
Why?
But I just don't – after these last few years, four or five years of just not being able to get the job done with I believe, top-tier players, why is it that he can't get the job done? Is it because of, well, 13 seconds? You know, last year playing the Ravens beat themselves. They should have beat us. We did not win that game. The Ravens lost. And, you know, that I forget who it was, falling backwards into the end zone. He makes that catch, that's it. The game's over.
Actually, the game's tied.
It would have been tied.
He makes that catch, the game's tied, and the Bills have the ball.
Well, we'll see. You know,
that's literally what would have happened. Like it's not an opinion. History, that's what would have happened.
History's proven that you end up losing. We end up losing.
Thanks, James, for the call.
They would have had the ball. I don't know if they would have scored. Maybe not. You know,
they were favored. The win probability for them, if they had scored, would have probably been like 70%. Because that's about what it was when they were going for the 2-point conversion.
Well,
I don't know.
The last couple times when they need a score to win and the game is tied, I'd like to know like the numbers on that versus when they need a score to win. Because, of course, their last two playoff losses, they've needed a score to win or tie and haven't gotten either one. And the only thing, you know, I find this, whatever, like when I was last on, I left for an hour to take the kids the first day of school. At 7 o'clock, I thought we had a really good conversation about McDermott and what actually would change. Here's my next question about this. It's another thing I wanted to get to today. Why is it, and again, not a guy on the radio saying they should fire one of them today. Why is it it's only McDermott that is talked about as he's not going to get him there and not the other primary person in charge?
All right.
The GM. Why does everybody go McDermott and not Bean? I think I know the answer. One of them is directly tied to Allen, right? Bean took Allen. And McDermott is the defensive guy that doesn't get much credit for Allen.
Yeah.
Doesn't McDermott get next to no credit for what Josh Allen has become?
It's very little.
It's the coordinators. It's Allen himself. I feel like people.
Yeah.
There are people. I shouldn't say people don't. But there are a lot of people that would say, you know, like the conversation started with Mike Florio saying, move on from McDermott, hire an offensive coach. Why? Because you need someone to make Allen even better. I think the team feels like he's pretty darn good, and that side's not the problem. So, I don't know. I'm kind of rambling here, but it is curious to me that there are two people at the top, and only one of them ever gets tied to, it's not good enough, they're not going to get it over the line.
Well,
the idea that the Bills keep losing with top-tier players, I don't know. They have one top-tier player. One.
They have one.
And they have a couple of really nice high-level players, but they have two top-tier players. If I give you Milano in his prime, and we'll see if he can get back to that. But they don't have this glut of top-tier players.
No, they do not.
Does Baltimore?
More so.
They might have more. Does Kansas City have more? Does Philadelphia have more? Definitely, right?
Well, the other reason is 13 seconds.
For sure.
Directly. Like, the other reason that I think McDermott gets more than Bean, I wonder if they lose that game in some other fashion. You know, they just lose the way maybe they've lost the last two. Is it sound any different? Is the split different? Because that one, it's hard to really point blame at anybody else other than maybe other people on the coaching staff or maybe Levi Wallace. But it's hard to point to the GM on that one. But like last year, if you wanted to, like you could point to, hey, what's one reason I lost? Kyrie Elam had to play because that's the best I had at corner available mm-hmm. to me. Mm-hmm. And I got toasted for it. I was one injury away from the failed first-round pick having to go in and play in the biggest game of the season. And there's other things you could point to around the roster defensively that you could make that case. But why does that not happen? Because I think McDermott gets the blame for 13 seconds from almost everybody.
Yep. Well, I'm just going to – it's my new thing I've kind of landed on, which is if you want McDermott fired because you think like the caller does – I always right. like to ask, who instead, and are you thinking they should go with a different defensive mind? Brian Flores? If the offense is not the problem, don't I want to fix the defense in a more drastic way? If that's what you think, wouldn't you want a more drastic approach to the defense and not someone that overhauls the offense, which has really never been a problem outside of a few games?
Well, no, I do, but you're expecting you're going to hire a new defensive coordinator who probably doesn't ever go anywhere because those guys, it depends how old the guy is. You know, is maybe Bobby Babich becomes a head coach. But historically, I'm probably keeping the defensive coordinator more often than I'm keeping the offensive coordinator. So maybe Brian Flores is my defensive coordinator or someone like that. Whoever gets fired as a head, maybe if D'Amico Ryans gets
and
fired.
That's your way of making ultimately the change that you want on defense.
Right.
Is to just, yeah, sure. All right. It makes sense. Thanks to the caller. If Andrews catches that, we might have an entirely different storyline for the entire season. Right? What if Andrews catches yes. that and the offense does not get a game-winning kick and then they lose in overtime? Are we mad at the defense for giving up that drive?
You know, like,
or are we mad at the offense for not getting it done? Like, you know, it all depends. Like Joe Brady flat out says, the last 2 years we lost with a chance to win.
It might have been a real fight because the offense was so pedestrian in the second half, just a couple field goals and punts. But the defense, people would have wanted to blame you. What lead did you blow? You were up. What was the lead in that game?
It was 21-10, I believe.
21-10. Okay, I guess it's not, you know, crazy. But you blew an 11-point lead at halftime. How'd you let them catch up? I think people could point to the defense. I would want to say it's the offense.
I would have been ready for that fight. You can't blow a lead without your offense letting that team back in it, especially if you're like the top offense in the league. Like you can't right. blow a lead unless the offense says, you know, signs off on it to
right.
a point.
After going punt, punt, field goal.
Yeah. But they did win.
They did win.
They did win.
Yeah, no, you certainly don't flush it because there's a lot to learn. I mean, we have to understand how the game went, how they played us, what the schemes were. There's a lot of chess moves going on in that game that will be built on this game on both sides of the ball. And yeah, of course, the way the game is played, what we could have done better, certainly. What we did well, same for them, I'm sure, too.
John Harbaugh and the Ravens. In town, Sunday night, week one. You've had your time. You've had your chances when it comes to John Harbaugh. It's another season of Bulldog hating on the Bills' opposing coaches. How do we start this year with John Harbaugh? You know what helps him? Having Jim Harbaugh as his brother.
That's right. Because I really, really cannot stand Jim Harbaugh. And so it feels... Well, I mean, let's be honest. All of this feels really petty, but it would feel really petty to extend my hatred of his brother to him.
Yeah, that's right.
The best. I don't really. I'm sorry. I'm letting you down. I don't.
It's still early.
There was a thing with him about some record they were trying to set for rushing yards that really annoyed me.
Yeah.
That I know I gravitated toward when asked about this even last September when they played them in, what was that, week 4 they played them last year?
Yes. There was a game in Denver a few years ago, and maybe they kept Jackson in at the end to pick up a few more yards because they were going for this record, quote record, of consecutive weeks rushing X number of yards. It's really not a record at all.
And it was like some dopey number, like 89 yards or something. Like it just was not
terrible.
It wasn't like a big round boxcar number. It was just some weird number. At least that's how I remember it. I was going to go with that. And so that really ticked me off. And I just thought, like, come on.
That is the chump zone.
If somebody was doing that to you, you'd be complaining about it and you know it. You'd say something to the guy at midfield at the handshake. So I don't know. But He's a former special teams coach, and I like that. You know, just that he's been
people
at the peak of his profession from that background. But yeah, I don't know.
We got to get this hate back.
Yeah, I do. I got to try.
It's still
a little
too
harder.
Nice out.
I got to try a little harder.
It's still not week one. It's too nice out. At least we got Vrabel back for this.
Yeah.
This year, two times Vrabel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nick Sirianni.
That'll work all
That'll
day.
Work.
All day. Big Dom.
Big Dom. Don't get near him.
Dull. It's all.
I can see Joe Biscaglia sort of tiptoeing near Big Dom buddy. Down there on the field with his socks. Kellen Moore, no.
Yeah, I don't know. Aaron
Raheem
Glenn.
Morris. Aaron Glenn?
I don't. You know.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think you can bring yourself to hate Aaron Glenn?
I'll do what I can. I will do what I can. It's tough. I mean, it's tough. Like I wanted to like. I wanted
Dave Canales.
I wanted to like Mike McDaniel.
You did like Mike McDaniel.
Like,
so did
different
I.
style. I was worried it might not work because of the personality, and like maybe that ultimately will be the undoing. I don't want to claim that as a victory sitting here now, as we'll see. Maybe they'll have a surprisingly really good season or something, and he'll go on to coach them for another 5 years or something. But I don't. You know, his style, I think, is not conducive to bringing a room of 70 football players together. I think Vrabel is interesting because I respect him as a coach a lot. I like him a lot as a coach, but he just annoys me.
You don't like his face.
I don't like his face. I don't like. Yeah, no.
He was in your defense, he was a Patriots player for a long time, like an impactful Patriots player. Like remember Brewski? Is he still around on TV,
He's
maybe?
He's on TV.
You know, some of these guys, Gronk, of course, like some of these guys, like, oh, it wasn't just Brady and Belichick.
They're never going away, right. Vrabel's catching touchdown passes and, like, just get out of here.
Just leave.
Yeah.
But some of these coaches, like maybe John Harbaugh, that the Bills play this year, you don't hate them. McDaniel, Andy Reid.
Boy, I would really like to work myself into a place where I hated Andy Reid.
Oh, you know what?
How hard would
How
that be?
How great would that be, though?
It's so hard.
How great would that be if somebody just came in absolutely blazing hot about Andy Reid?
Right.
Like, what would the thing be?
I don't even know. I don't know. I really don't.
Does he come off as, like, smug at all?
I don't feel like I don't get that from him. No. No, he seems like a pretty easygoing, heavy-set dude. And like that guy's hard to hate.
Yeah, that's true. Stefanski, no. Zach Taylor, you'll never hate because of the Hamlin game.
Right.
Too much respect. Dave Canales might take some work.
That's going to take
off
a lot
of bye.
That's going to take a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, not the easiest season necessarily for coach hating.
No.
Who's missing? Pete Carroll isn't on here. Would you be able to hate Pete Carroll? He's not. It's not hate with Pete Carroll, but he can be a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some sort of conspiracy theory stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, you know, slow down over there, working yourself up into a lather, congratulating your defense for a 3rd-and-8 stop down 20-3. Just, you know what? Let's just pick our spots. Sean Payton isn't on here this year. That's an easy one.
That's an easy one. The visors. Sorry.
Jim Harbaugh isn't on here this year. Dable, Dan Quinn.
I really need to dig
McVay,
in.
McVay.
I'm going to need to dig in.
Kyle Shanahan. A lot of the marquee coaches are missing from the Bills' schedule. Yeah, you are going to have to dig in. No more time off here. No more days off.
No, that's for sure. Yeah.
Michael is with us. Hello.
Everything okay there?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Yeah, sorry. This guy almost cut me off on the highway.
Well, glad you made it through to talk to us. It's very important.
Sorry, guys. I just wanted to touch on Gabe Davis. I heard Joel this morning with Jeremy just going on tilt about Davis being re-signed. I agree with Jeremy. I don't think he gets past the practice roster. He's always been a good leader. We've always heard that from Dal and other guys that cover the Bills, and he is a good leader. And just in case, God forbid, there's an injury in the playoffs, you got a guy in your practice squad that hopefully he doesn't get plucked, or he might even get plucked, you never know. But from a leadership perspective, I think it's great. He can kind of show Coleman the way. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be much of a factor.
I hope it's not, and I don't say that to be, because I agree with how you put it. You know, if he needs to be called on, that's dependability, you know, trust. There's a lot, and there's, you know, a reasonably talented football player in there if he's healthy. So I think I got no problem with any of that. The place you'd run into trouble to me, and I don't predict this at all, though Sal was talking about him getting to the roster once he's healthy, I just don't know where you're putting him. You're displacing either Palmer, who was your marquee free agent signing, certainly on that side of the ball. Joey Bosa's probably was a bigger deal financially. Only 1 year, though. Palmer's multi-years. But Palmer's should be entrenched out there on one side, and Coleman's your other outside receiver, and you should be heavily invested in making that work. So if Davis has to play for a reason outside of injury, then you... Something's derailed. Something isn't going the way you planned on it going, I think. It's fine to have a backup plan, and Davis is a good backup plan. And hopefully injury is the only reason he has to see the field. Because I think if he sees the field any other way, it's something went wrong.
Joe was on tilt. About what? Because Gabe Davis might play? Maybe, I guess. He didn't draft him last night, Joe. I know that. So he might hate him. I've been baffled by sort of the aura, if you will, of the conversation with Davis. Like, I just don't get it. What are we worried about? Gabe Davis... they've got 5-6 receivers on the active roster. He's below them. Maybe there's someone else in the practice squad he might be below. I don't even know. Do we not think he's like among the top 250 NFL receivers, you know, receivers in the league, whatever that math is, like familiarity with the quarterback, everything else, the organization? I mean, of course, you don't want to have anybody on your practice squad have to mean a lot, but my goodness, we've been pining for receiver talent for how long? And he doesn't qualify? I don't know how Joe feels. The caller, he was honking at people. I don't know how Joe feels, but you should have called Joe, maybe. Like, I'm still baffled by what we're afraid of with this. He was good. I'm not going to spend any more energy on it unless people can explain it to me. What's the problem? They didn't cut somebody for Gabe Davis to come back. In fact, they waited out the entire offseason where he got made visits to other teams, and he was perfectly free to, if he got an offer, to sign with Pittsburgh or San Francisco or wherever else he went. The Bills wait out the whole thing. I think maybe it was because they don't have that much money to play with. And so, sure, we'll take you. But, you know, only on our terms. Then the offseason ends. Like, all right, I'll take it. You know, I want to work.
Yeah.
He's 26. What even is it? Sal was on this morning, and they talked to him about this. And I think maybe it was Joe who asked Sal, like, is he for you the likeliest of these veterans on the practice squad to come up? And he didn't quite say yes. Like, he talked about Phillips, and he talked about the nuances of, like, you've got the Dwayne Carter injury, different circumstances that are in play. So he didn't quite say yes. But he also, I think, said it wouldn't surprise him if they called Davis up at some point. And I don't know, are we supposed to hate that if that happens? Who's out when that happens where it's such a crime? That I don't know. Like, if they lost Coleman again for a game and they brought Davis up to play,
what he should be here for,
right?
And I have no problem with that. I don't know. I would have a hard time. You're trying to figure out why people would be mad about that, and I don't have any idea. You know, if it's a larger, you know, receiver room issue, you know, because when they had him in for the visit, even, but you know, a few weeks before they brought him back here now to the practice squad. I made a point about, like, you want to tell me how set you are at receiver again? Like, you're going back to Gabe Davis. You know, but that, again, that's the top end of the thing. And that's not, to me, if you're mad about Gabe Davis being here because you think he's about to, like, just assume the role he had when last he appeared in a Bills uniform, I mean, I don't know 100% that you're dead wrong, but I think I'm pretty sure you're dead wrong. He's not going to be your number two receiver.
Yeah, I don't even. I didn't think to bring it up today. Caller wanted to bring it up. Maybe Joe was mad. I don't know. But Twitter, like I said last week, a version of this, like Twitter, Bills fans on Twitter read like they all own restaurants and Gabe Davis never paid his check. Like he visited all their restaurants and just like stiffed them or somebody. Like he did things below the surface that we don't even know what they are unless you're sort of in the know, and crimes against humanity or something like that. I don't understand. Probably not meaningfully relevant to anything that happens here this year. If he is, it's because it's good. Because they'll need him because they're thin or they're just not that talented at that position, and he gets healthy and goes in and makes plays that make you remember 4 years ago. Is that impossible? I mean, it's
not impossible, but I would not say that that's good. If it's injury, that's fine. If any of these other guys don't perform well enough that Gabe Davis has to be called on for performance reasons, I'm going to feel like we didn't do a very good job of putting together a good receiver room.
Okay, and that is something to talk about more, like we haven't done that 100,000 times, but you know, that I think both things could be true. I think it could be good because they need him, because somebody else didn't make it, and, you know, regrettable draft pick or signing, but you have a little bit of a parachute in this guy. I think that's more credible than most other possible options.